Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Fourth and final hour here on this Monday afternoon. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5, The Game. We bring in our buddy Stu Grimson. NHL Network is where you can find his work. Former Predator, used to be Willie's broadcast partner on the Predators broadcast, and we always enjoy our conversations with the Grim Reaper. Stu, how you doing?
Hey, I'm good, guys. Everybody, come Monday morning, everybody fairly entertained now that we've got hockey back on the ice?
Do you know how nice it has been today for the first 3 hours of the show to have a true reaction Monday to live sports? It is so refreshing.
You know how nice it is? You know how nice it is to have a break from the CNN coronavirus global and U.S. Case counter? Do you know how
nice
a break that is?
This is a very nice break. It's a very welcomed break. I don't know if you made your predictions or not, Stu, if you made them public and official. We did on Friday's show. And I said at the very beginning of today's show, I just said figuratively, we're not going to make any changes. But the three of us made our picks. And I said, let's just say you feel like after watching all this hockey this weekend, you could go back and make one change to one of your picks. And we're not going to, but let's just say for the sake of this discussion, you feel like it's a whoops pick. And I immediately identified right out of the gates. I watched Carolina and New York on Saturday. And I went, whoops, I'm on the wrong side. I picked the Rangers, and I still feel even stronger about that now, considering it's 3-1 in the third period. But going into these series, in your mind, you thought somebody was going to win, and then after just one game, you've reassessed and you think, uh-oh, I may be on the wrong side. Which series would that be?
Oh, gosh, that is a really good question. I mean, you know, I'm sure we'll spend some time talking about the matchup that involves the local squad. And I really, as much as I like those Coyotes, I think they're really scrappy. I think they're very well coached. They play to a fairly well-defined structure, play to their identity, and get, you know, consistent goaltending. I still saw the Preds prevailing. And that's not to say I've counted the Preds out, not by a long shot, but I'll tell you, when you're faced with, you know, a rather daunting statistic, which goes along the lines of 85% of the teams that win in game one, in a five game series, since we've had this series in existence, this form of a series, you know, that's kind of a daunting statistic. So this will be a close one to call. This will be a very tough one to call. Big challenge for Nashville going into game two.
So where do you stand on the side of Matthew Tkachuk and the whole Jets-Flames series? Scheifele goes down in the first period. Paul Maurice has been very vocal about the Tkachuk hit. Obviously, Ward has defended his team. Where do you stand on that hit?
Well, here's the thing. You know, I think a lot of us get kind of wrapped up in getting into the intent of the player, the attacking player in any given circumstance like this. And really, I think you kind of have to set aside intent and just not fall into that part of the discussion, because I think it ends up being kind of immaterial, doesn't inform the situation at all. As I look at that, I understand that there's certainly an argument for the fact that there may have been some kind of a kicking motion where Tkachuk is concerned. I just, at the end of the day, to charge a player or discipline a player for something like that, and I understand there's a really tough injury on the other side of this to a key player for the Winnipeg Jets. But I honestly, I think I would need to see more before I ever got to a place where I was putting Tkachuk in suspension territory of a game or two or more.
By the way,
I would need to see more that looked like, you know, a player's intentional kick.
We're about 25 minutes away from the drop of the puck for game two in that series. Have we seen anything on Scheifele or Laine? Has there been any official anything out there yet?
To my knowledge, no. To my knowledge, no. I have not heard anything.
We'll keep close tabs on that. There were a lot of penalties called in the Predators-Coyotes game, 11 power play opportunities between the two teams. There were a lot of power plays around the league over the weekend, a lot of penalties. Do you just chalk that up as unusual circumstances, everybody coming back from four-plus months off, a little sloppy play out of the gates, undisciplined play, I guess?
I think so. And I think, too, you know, to me, I attribute it to two things, Darren. I think, you know, there are, in a lot of these series or the games that we saw over the course of the weekend, we saw two teams for whatever reason or teams matching up that were kind of in a different emotional states to start. Some started fast, some started a little flat. And I think anytime that happens, you can get, you know, that team that's flat, that team that's trailing ends up taking a lot of penalties. And the other piece I chalk it up to is, you know, I maintain it tends to be easier to defend than it is to generate offense when you've had a long layoff like this. But that's an overly simplistic view, because at the end of the day, you know, defense requires a good read. Defense isn't just about skating hard and making sure you've got your man. Defense requires, you know, a mental read of the play, and having sustained a long layoff like these guys have, that part of the game will come back by repetition, but they're probably a little rusty in that respect as well. So, again, teams on emotional planes in a different space, and then I think this inability to read like you would that we typically see this time of year on the defensive side of things.
Which city has the greater chance, Stu, of burning couches in the streets if they lose in this qualifying round, Toronto or Edmonton? Which one?
You know what? I've often said this. Toronto is, there is no better place to be a hockey player when hockey is going well. But there is no place that's more challenging to play than Toronto when it's not going well. Leafs fans love their Leafs, but it's kind of, it's a bizarre, kind of a really peculiar thing. They love to hate their Leafs when things are going poorly, too. So I think they might just, you know, they might turn on that club if they fail to advance past this round.
So Toronto will be burning couches in the streets if the Leafs can't turn the series around. Okay.
That's my best guess.
Willie?
We're talking to Stu Grimson from the NHL Network. By the way, I just saw a couple of tweets of the line rushes. No Scheifele and no Laine for the Jets. So
yikes.
Tough to lose players of that caliber in that
I'd
in
like
that
to
situation.
Change my pick now.
Can we make – we all three took Winnipeg. Can we officially right now, before they drop the puck, change to Calgary?
Probably. You know, but Stu, you threw out the numbers of the five-game series, and it is eye-opening for sure. Of course, there haven't been the five-game series in a long, long time, but it is interesting. Put yourself in the locker room, and your team is down 1-0. You can't do anything about the first game other than make the adjustments. But how does it change your mindset? I mean, when you boil it down, you just have to try to go back and start off game two the right way, et cetera, right? You have to try to keep it simple if you can and not pay attention to the numbers.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, Willie, you know, because I think that the statistic that I threw out there, the 85%, if you win game one of a five-game series, 85% chance you'll go on to prevail in that series. I think it's worth kind of really honing in on that, because I don't know that 85% necessarily, 85%, a statistic like that applies to this particular circumstance. Remember, that 85% is taken from a scenario where teams have had a full regular season and then advance into the playoffs, and then they're put in the context of a five-game series. Those folks are really on top of their games, and you're not going to have a lot of variance where that 85% is concerned. So the point I'm making is, right now, teams are struggling to find their games, and I think there are ebbs and flows in consistency. So that number probably needs to be more like, well, I think we'll end up finding that number is probably more like 75% or 70% or less in a context like this. So, you know, if I'm the Nashville Predators, there is lots of positive stuff to draw from that outing. Yes, they're guilty of a slow start. They got some quirky bounces. I give Arizona all kinds of credit for, you know, putting the pressure on the defense, the Predators, to defend just by getting pucks there. I thought that's a that appeared to be a tactic, a strategy that served them well. But at the end of the day, the way that that game wore on, I mean, I think you saw through the back half of that game, Nashville was probably the stronger team. Regrettably for Nashville Predators fans, for Smashville, the score just didn't bear that out.
Which 12 seed do you think has a better chance of winning? This is the kind of question you guys like to kick around on the NHL Network shows. I think it's great. So you have Chicago and Edmonton, both won in very – I'm sorry, Chicago – And Montreal won in very different ways. You know, Montreal, the classic goalie steals it, it goes to overtime, and then Chicago just jumped all over a flat Oilers team. So who do you give a better chance of winning the series?
You know, it's a tough question. In the one series, you know, you've got the Carey Price factor, and gosh, you know, my broadcast counterpart, Kevin Weeks, is fond of saying, I just don't bet against superheroes, and that's what you've got. That's what you've got in Carey Price. You've got a superhero. I don't know. I really do see the Penguins coming back. I see the Penguins, given the way they're built, given the Crosby factor, I think that's going to be a competitive series. As I look at the Blackhawks versus Oilers series, you know, you've got guys like Jonathan Toews, and to me, he drives that team, and sometimes even in very subtle ways. You've got, you know, the top-end guys who have experience, I think, are leading, and then you've got a newer layer of young players like Kubalik kind of coming into the mix, and I see these guys really settling in, really buying into the culture, and starting to benefit, and the tangible results become obvious. So to me, at the end of the day, as I weigh those two series, I like the Blackhawks perhaps even stronger than the Canadiens to go on and win as a 12 seed.
We're talking to Stu Grimson of the NHL Network. And something we were discussing earlier, Stu, as it relates to the Predators and the Arizona Coyotes, was it seems with this Preds team that there are times in a game throughout the season, you can even trace this back to last season, where things might get away from them. There's a bad goal, a bad bounce, and it just snowballs out of control and they can't stop it. Why do you think that is? Do you think it's just the makeup of this team? They need a leader that's like a Mike Fisher type or Shea Weber type that they've had in the past. What do you think is going on with that?
Yeah, that's interesting. It's a good question, Chase. And I think really before I would identify players where that concern or that trend is concerned with the Preds, you know, what you're really talking about is, one, it's an inability to start on time and to start with energy and play at top tempo. And then two, once things, you know, if things don't go your way, you need kind of that take charge presence within the locker room and to get things kind of going in a different direction. Because what you're dealing with at that moment is a tremendous sag in confidence. And I think, you know, in part due to the unavailability of somebody like Ryan Ellis in the past, and I'm encouraged to see him in the mix, him playing the way he's playing, I think a Ryan Ellis is somebody that's probably every bit as important to one leading to leading by example to this group at the end of the day. And again, that should be an encouragement to Preds fans. To me, they have the personnel to kind of get this turned around. I'd be looking to the likes of a Yossi, the likes of a Ryan Johansson, a Duchesne, Ryan Ellis specifically, because we've seen him elevate his game in the past to impact the group for the better.
89 consecutive playoff starts for Pekka Rinne. comes to an end yesterday. UC Soros gets the start. I know they didn't get the W, but what did you think about Soros' performance?
Yeah, I thought he was pretty solid. By no means was he spectacular. The trouble with UC and UC's outing, he was in a really tough circumstance. I mean, when you have a goal like the initial, like the 1-0 goal, kind of one go off Kyle Turris from well out at the point, then number two, it kind of loops off of Duchesne at a really awkward angle. You know, early on in the match, he's having to deal with probably, you know, kind of a personal challenge just in terms of, you know, starting one down. And then, two, the club in front of him, I thought, went through a bit of a collective sag there as well. So that's probably the answer for goals two and three. Beyond that, I thought UC was solid. I would have no concerns about John Hines coming back with UC because, you know, we've really seen him. And Willie and I sat up there in the booth and really evaluated him from the moment he stepped into the organization. He's demonstrated he's the kind of goaltender that could, you know, that could carry you to a three-game series win versus the Coyotes.
We've talked a lot too about the Jofa line, the top line of Arvidsson, Johansson, and Forsberg being put back together. You look at the score sheet.
By the way, we still have to credit Stu, I think, for coining the phrase. He got it. I think he got an idea from, I can't remember exactly the details, Stu, but I think you were the first really to bring it to the table on the airwaves. Are you printing, like, you know, trademarks or anything? You might have the rights there.
You know, before you raised it, I had not considered that, but there may be some intellectual property rights to be possessed there. Well, you're right.
I think you should jump on that, Stewie. I think that would be good. But yesterday, they obviously were the best line, and that's the concern to me, that I want to see them together. We all want to see them together. We know what they can do. But it's everybody behind them that has to step up. I mean, there was a ton of success had by the Bonino line this year, and yesterday they just weren't really on the ice much. So how do you find that balance of knowing that you have that top line that can do so much for you, but you have to get something out of the rest of your players as well?
Yeah, and you're exactly right, Chase. I prefer this roster when those three are together, but typically two scenarios come up where you have to separate one or more from that three-player trio. And one, it's if, you know, lines two through four aren't going well. Typically what Coach Laviolette has done in the past, and I'm sure Coach Hines to some degree, you know, Arvidsson is the kind of guy that can get other people going. He can generate momentum and generate opportunity for other lines. So maybe you're mixing him in through line two alongside of Turris or Duchesne or something like that. And then, too, sometimes we've even seen the Jofa unit get into a bit of a funk themselves, whereby whoever's pushing the buttons at that time is kind of changing up the mix in that regard. But, you know, there's a lot to like with the way they started, the way they played through the opening game versus Arizona. I mean, I'm inclined in the context of a five-game series where, you know, every game just grows in importance as compared to a seven-game series. I'm sure we'll see Coach Hines keep that unit intact. It was really one of the bright storylines, one of the truly positive elements that came out of the first outing for the Preds. And I think they could have the impact of kind of elevating the rest of the group along with them if they're able to get on the board first.
Real quick, Stu, what did you make of the whole front office deal with the Coyotes? And how cool is it to have a couple former Preds and Steve Sullivan and Scott Walker now sliding into the roles that they're in because of that bizarre story?
Yeah, I don't have a good feel for what went on there. It seems a very strange situation, but so glad to see Sully step up. And he, you know, I really give him a lot of credit. You know, here's a guy who's kind of put in his time. He has learned the operations side of our game, kind of ground up, starting at the player development level, And this is a guy that, you know, he's a good guy, and you want to see the good people. You want to see them succeed. So I think they've got a good thing going. I mean, I really do think that Chaika was instrumental in getting this group, you know, heading in the right direction and forming a good bit of this, the current identity that they have. I think they've got a pretty good thing going. And, you know, hopefully Sully's in a spot where he gets a chance to kind of to build on that, although that's probably a better conversation to have in a different market other than Middle Tennessee.
Probably so. Remember, if Columbus pulls out that series, watch out for the couches in Toronto. Stu, good stuff as always. Good to talk to you. And continue to keep up the good work. We'll be watching, and we'll talk to you soon.
Good show, you three. Fun to be with you.
Yep. Thanks, Stu Grimson, Stu. NHL Network is where you can find him, former Predator. Always good to catch up with him. Rangers still down 3-1 in that game, about 8 minutes to go in that contest. They will be down 0-2 in that series if they don't turn things around in a hurry, and they're about 5-10 minutes away from dropping the puck with Calgary and Winnipeg. Flames up 1-0 in that series. More of Darren Donick and Chase on the other side. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Get two tickets for two parks for the price of one. It's getting heated up in Toronto. Rangers have had enough. That's two tickets for the price of one. You've got Beach Bend and Splash Lagoon Water Park. That's on sale right now. All you have to do is go to our website, GameNashville.com. Click on Beach Bend. Buy one, get one free. There's an ad right there to purchase your tickets now for just $37.99. Svechnikov with a hat trick. And it's all Hurricanes, 4-1, with approaching 5.5 minutes to go in this one. And there's some fights now, and this puppy is over. Just like I said, I was on the wrong side. I knew it after Saturday, and this was going to be a clean sweep. Carolina's just that much better than the Rangers. But it is interesting because I was looking at Adam Kimmelman, who writes for NHL.com, and he has posted this stat in the last hour, or tweeted this stat. To Willie's, this is what he knows. He knows that a team that's going to go down 0-2, which will not be the Rangers, and they're going to come back and win this best-of-five series. But how important are game twos? That's the headline of the tweet. How important are game twos? Well, let's look at this. Teams that take a 2-0 lead in a best-of-five series all time, the record, there's 56 times that a team has taken a 2-0 lead in a best-of-five series in the NHL. It's happened 56 times. You care to guess what the record is?
So
it's got to be... It's got to be, you know, 52-4 or 50-6 or something like that. Probably, right?
Well, I don't know. So I'm asking you, 56 times, what's the record of the team that takes the 2-0 lead that goes on and wins the series?
But remember,
I'll say 48.
The NHL has not played a five-game series since 1986. So this is a different time, but
48-8 is what Chase said. She said 50-6.
I'll say 51-5.
Okay. They're both wrong. How about 55-1?
Wow.
55-1. The Islanders are the only team to ever dig themselves out of an 0-2 hole and win a series. They did it against the Capitals in 1985.
I think Stu made a good point.
I'm going to build on what Stu said. We're in a different era, which includes a salary cap, right? So the teams are more evenly matched. This is what I'm basing my somebody's going to come back theory on. And it is only a theory. I can't say that I know, even though I did it for...
You just said that's what you said.
But you said you knew.
As much as I
would
like
to
know...
I even said,
I'm not all
knowing. You know that? And you said, yes,
I am not omniscient. I am not omniscient, but I am theorizing based on these things.
I'm going to give Mike Vrabel your number for that backpedaling.
You have a salary cap? I'm sticking to my prediction. You have a salary cap, so you have evenly matched teams. You have no travel, so it's very different. And as Stu said, you have teams that have been off for all these months and then getting back. So, you know, somebody's going to catch fire after a couple of games. And they're going to be better than they were in the first two games. I just think that is likely to happen. So that's what I'm basing it on.
Okay.
In the 80s and the 70s, you had more mismatches, right? You had some powerful teams. There were only six teams up until 1967 or whatever, right? And then you had powerful teams like the Islanders, who in 1985, they had won, you know, four out of the last five Stanley Cups going into that series. So they probably, I don't have to go back and look, but I would imagine they were favored in that series to
start
with.
Was there a guy by the name of Nystrom on that team?
I'm guessing he might have still been there at that time, a couple years after the dynasty. But you see my point. You had some powerful Canadiens teams as a one seed, just probably ripping through a bunch of teams who were the four seed in their division, or the, you know, 1 versus 16. However they did it, the various ways back then, I just think it's a way different deal now. So I would not go as much by. You know, what has happened in NHL playoff series. I think it's a better thing to look at all the other sports. Like in baseball, which is, I think, a better comparison, you do see an occasional team come back from 2-0 down to win. More often than 55-1. You know, I'm not saying it happens all the time, but it does happen more often.
Rangers can't buy a goal. Had a wide-open net and missed. Just wide-open net.
And they've had, what, 4 shots in the third period?
Look at this right here. Boop, boop. Yeah, there's like, it's like there's a cover in front of the net. I didn't say that it's not going to happen. Ugh. I'm just reading the stat. That's it. 56 times
yes.
It's happened, and it's 55-1.
I'm just trying to look a little deeper into the stat because let's take the Red Sox in 04 against the Yankees. Those two teams were extremely evenly matched. And so when it was 3-0 in games, you're thinking to yourself, there's just not that much separating these two teams. Now, you'd have been, you probably could have retired if you'd have put all your money down and said the Red Sox were going to go win that series after they lost 19-8 or whatever in game 3. But you had to say, you know, these two teams, it's an anomaly that there would be a sweep between two evenly matched teams like that. In the NHL, there's just not that much that separates most of these teams. So I just think somebody is going to come back from 2-0. Somebody's going to do it.
Okay.
It's on tape. It's on tape.
It's on tape. We're going to hold
it. We said mark the audio.
And at least three teams are going to win having lost the first game.
That is a very strong.
And I probably should have stuck with two or more on that one.
You probably should have stuck with two, but we'll see.
I think that one has a better chance than being down 0-2. That one certainly does. But hey, you as you know, Willie, we will not let you forget things that you say. So we got your back.
I think we've let Darren forget a few things he said, or at least he's pretended to forget.
I try not to.
I don't think so.
I try not to. I make sure that if
I've made a point already, get in here and tell you how much I think my picks are a bunch of blunders. I don't I don't like my picks at all. I think
swing
it's a bunch of crap. I think there's a lot of swinging and misses.
Let's talk about the Rangers. As you mentioned, you know, you were like, ooh, goofed on that one. Here's what's going on for the Ranger fans. They have started Henrik Lundqvist twice.
Yep.
And I think it's fair to say the Rangers have just been outplayed from start to finish in this series, right? They have not been the better team. But I think there will probably be a lot of second guessers. Why did you start Lundqvist? Why didn't you start one of the two phenom goalies that appear to be the future and were outplaying Lundqvist during the regular season? They went opposite of what the Predators did because the ultimate respected franchise man got the nod for the Rangers, and it didn't happen for the Predators. So we'll see how it all plays out here. But I would have to imagine now down 2-0, what else do you have to lose? You got to try one of the young goalies now if you're the Rangers, don't you?
You got to do whatever at this point.
I mean, you're down 0-2, and we just read the stats, so I guess you have to do whatever.
And Carolina on the power play.
You,
you got one bullet left in the holster here.
Yeah. No, they're just simply not as good as Carolina. Like, Carolina is just the way better team. Like I said, I identified it pretty early on Saturday. I was like, whoa, Carolina's just way better than New York.
Yeah, and they play tomorrow. So, I mean,
yep.
Because the back-to-backs are worked in, so a lot of these games that we're going to see today, we'll also see at least some of them tomorrow.
I just saw this from Jeff Goodman. He tweeted out the deadline for today for the NCAA players, college basketball players, is midnight tonight, Eastern time. So 11 o'clock our time for players to withdraw their name from the NBA draft. And the reason I bring it up is because there's some prominent guys in the SEC. Javonte Smart for LSU, Trendon Watford, LSU, and Eve Pons for Tennessee are the three names that he identified, as it'll be interesting to see what they do. And we saw over the weekend, by the way, a lot of big names decide that they are going back. The kid at Iowa, right? We saw some big names come out and say, I'm withdrawing, I'm going back to school, I'm playing this college basketball season. I don't know if you guys saw that over the weekend.
I did not.
Yep. So I'll be curious if the two
I'm still trying to process what Gary Parrish told us last week about this. Go to an island if you need to play the NCAA tournament. Right?
Well,
or
I agree with what he's being told. Basically, what he's being told is we will do whatever. We are having an NCAA basketball tournament. There will be March Madness.
Right.
I don't know if it'll be March Madness.
So March Madness can't happen
tournament.
If you don't play a regular season, right? But so some of the things he was talking about to try to preserve the regular season were pretty interesting. Something like you send everybody to a college campus that is – safe. You do all of your classes Zoom-wise, you know, remotely, online, and you basically have a big basketball tournament in the same gym. You play all your conference games over a period of time there. You keep everybody in school. He said, hey, some of these college football players are already taking their classes online. They're not intermingling much with the students anyway, for better or worse, which I don't like that in normal circumstances, but there is a precedent for it.
Well, what it told me, and listening to Gary Parrish, who joined us on Friday's show, it told me the people that he's talking about, and he is obviously well in tune with the college basketball scene. He talks to a lot of important people. It told me what I've suspected and what we've been talking a lot on the show. There's just no way that they lost billions on no NCAA tournament this year, and they didn't finish the conference tournaments. What he's being told is there's no way they could recover if they don't have some type of college basketball season and an NCAA tournament. It's the fallout we've been talking about. You're not going to want to see what it looks like on the other side. You close your eyes. You're not going to want to see.
Right.
It'll be very, very bad. That's what he's being told. Like, we don't have a choice. It's either we figure this out and we do anything and everything, we take drastic measures, or college athletics as we know it is about to go away. And I don't know if it's forever, but it's about to go away for, you know, a period of time, except for college football. Just everything else is just going to go away. It's just going to slip off into the abyss, and nobody wants that. But that's basically the info. That's what I took out of the interview. That's what he's being told from the higher-ups, from important people in college basketball. We have to do anything and everything. There has to be a season. There has to be an NCAA tournament, or all this is going to go away. We won't survive.
No, I took that away too. I definitely noticed that. So I think they just realized the importance and what they have to do. And if, you know, with college basketball – I think it would probably – there's still logistics involved, but it would be easier, especially in tournament time, to pull off the bubble scenario. But you have to get there. You have to get to that. So how do you do that? Do you just go, like, conference schedules and play an SEC bubble? Then you're also including the group of five. It's not like football where it's separate. I mean, the NCAA tournament has everybody. So there's obviously a lot more to figure out.
And meanwhile, you've got the Pac-12, all the stuff going on with that conference over the weekend when it comes to college football. How about that?
Yeah, I mean, I did see that. It kind of goes along the lines of just the ever-changing news cycle with all of this as they all try to figure it all out. So, I mean, with the players, you know, with their – what is the hashtag, We Are United? Is that what they're using?
Some of that stuff is good. Some of it has no chance. Their list,
right.
Some of it just has literally no chance. No chance whatsoever. But, you know, I think they're realizing they've got more power than they think, especially in these times, without a doubt.
That goes back to a conversation we had, you know, probably when the Mike Gundy thing happened, of the players calling out their coaches and realizing the voice that they have, no matter the level. Now, some have gone about it maybe the wrong way. Some have learned, and some have gone about it the right way. But it is just showing how loud their voices really can be.
Taylor Lewan doing a Zoom call today was, he said that he has not been doing any Preds beer chugging. Said he's got to get the bod ready for, those were his words, for the white unis. Oh, boy.
He also said, I'll do anything to play this season. He was talking about how you have to make the sacrifices and be a pro, all of the things that we were talking with Teron earlier today. And that is going to be part of a pathway to a championship, is the team that can be the most disciplined under the circumstances. Because it's easy for anybody, especially a young person, you know, maybe it's a young person that doesn't really have a family or any, you know, people around him that have any complications, to say, what the heck? I want to go out. I can't stay in anymore. I can't take it. Those teams are the ones that are at risk. I mean, the people that can stay tight and disciplined will benefit. It's the way it looks to me. You guys may differ, because there doesn't seem to be a bubble theory being floated out there at all. They're just going to go forward like baseball, and there will be some positive tests and people have to sit out.
Yep. The early returns, no, this will surprise no one. Winnipeg is all over Tkachuk. Every time he is on the ice, they are.
And Calgary's on the power play.
Over him. By the way, Svechnikov, that's the first playoff hat trick in Hurricanes history. So congratulations to him and their 4-1 victory. We'll come back and wrap up Monday's show next. Don't forget, game two tomorrow, 12:30 p.m. I'll have pregame for you, 1:30 puck drop. You'll hear Pete Weber and Hal Gill on the call. Everything right here on 102.5 The Game. If you would like to see the action, there's going to be a viewing party. Here's a couple destinations for you: Burger Republic and Party Foul. Burger Republic in Lenox Village or Mount Juliet, and you can enjoy the Forest Burger for a limited time. Plus $4 Happen Harry pints. Party Foul locations: there's one in Cool Springs, Galleria. There's one in Murfreesboro off Broad Street. One in Donelson off Lebanon Pike. And one in the Gulch in downtown. Party Foul is also got specials all day during happy hour. They're happy hours all day, basically, during the Preds game. Wear your gold, bring the noise, root on the Predators. Puck drops at 1:30, as I mentioned. Party Foul and Burger Republic will be following social distancing guidelines while you watch the Preds. So that should be a lot of fun tomorrow. All right, so let's talk about that. So do we all think, by the way, Winnipeg strikes first?
Yep, just saw that.
I didn't see who that is. Who's that? Harkins? I can't see who that is.
Yeah,
Harkins.
Fair to say it's one of the guys that is a replacement for Scheifele. He's not a regular, I don't think.
Harkins.
I'd have to look and see what his background is.
1-0 Jets, and that's about 7.5 minutes in. And they're jumping around, man. You could tell. The Jets have some pep in their step. We'll see if they can sustain it for the course of an entire game. Certainly early on, they're the ones that are all over the place. They are all over the puck, winning all the battles. So, like I said, long ways to go, but Winnipeg takes the early 1-0 lead. So do we feel that UC Saros gets the game to start? Does everybody feel like that is going to happen?
Yes.
I'm not 100% sure, but I think yes.
I think yes as well. So all three of us say yes. All right.
Here's the question is, with game 2 and 3, and maybe this is your next question, Darren, are you about to ask something about the back-to-back situation?
I was going to get there. But let's go there since we're on that topic. I said this morning with Robbie and Joe that I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that Pekka or they split the goal. Like, it's not a foregone conclusion. If UC goes out there and pitches a shutout tomorrow against Arizona, I don't think it's out of the question that he doesn't go right back to him in game 3 the very next day.
I think you're right. Although they haven't played in so long, it is something to consider. That 3 games in 4 nights, when going into yesterday, UC Saros had not played a full 60-minute game. Remember, they split up the exhibition game. They split up all the scrimmages. So it'll be something that has to be discussed backwards and forwards. But, you know, you can think of a lot of different things that could happen. A, Predators win, as you said, and the thought would be if Saros is strong, you come right back with him the next day. There's no travel, anything like that. If they lose bad and Saros doesn't play well, then it's pretty easy to say, well, back-to-back, you go with Pekka.
Sure.
Try to get a spark. But there's a lot of in-betweens, too. Like, you know, there could be your goalie plays well, but you still lose. Or you win, but the goalie doesn't play very well.
Yeah, what if they win 5-4?
Yeah. Then you have to look at the goals that were scored. You say to yourself, You know, there's a lot of different ways it can go.
Yeah, you have to factor in how much does Saros have to work. So, I mean, how many shots does he face, win or lose? You definitely have to factor that in. But I do believe that it's different now with no travel, because usually with a back-to-back, and I was talking about this yesterday with Ryan, that if you know, on a normal back-to-back, you leave. If you travel, you get into the next place at 2 a.m., got to turn around and do it all over again the next day. It makes sense to go to the backup. Now you just walk across the street, you're back at the hotel. So I do think that obviously is a big part of it. But as you were just saying, I mean, it depends on how the game goes. If it's a one goal game, and if it like the Preds win 1-0 and it's a goaltending game and he's got to work hard, then, you know, there is a chance that they do go to Pekka in game 3 simply because UC just got a lot of work and he's exhausted. So I just think they kind of have to take it, you know, just kind of look at it after the game and see what happens.
Here's a weird one for you. Predators win in double overtime, 3-2. So UC Saros has played four and a half periods, and you have back-to-back.
I think that becomes – I think we're – that to me becomes a little bit easier scenario. I think that's
– yeah.
To me, I kind of think it's a no-brainer at that point. You go to Pekka. I don't
really
think,
even though you won the game, and maybe Saros has a great game.
Yeah.
Yes, because
it's a long game. Yeah, you're probably changing goalies, but I'm saying that because I think it's everybody. I've heard just too much of it's just a foregone conclusion. Pekka plays one of these games, and UC plays the other, and I don't think it's a foregone conclusion.
No,
I'm
pretty sure it's not.
I don't think that it's a foregone conclusion that's going to be a split. Like,
right.
There's things that can happen in game 2 that tells me that UC Saros would be right back in there game 3. But I've seen a lot of people act like, yeah, there's no way that UC starts both, that this is where both play. And I'm like, well, that's not true. That's just not true at all. But I think there's also things that, as we've been saying right here, that play out that makes that decision pretty easy or easier.
Yeah.
And then
because
you see Pekka.
The thing that you don't want is a situation where Saros is just tired, is human and just exhausted, yet you go back to him and the leash has to be really, really short and you know, his confidence takes a hit because you got to pull him because he lets in two easy ones just because he's not seeing the puck because he's tired. So you have to – that's where you really have to monitor him and you have to monitor the situation because that – that to me would be bad. You just kind of have to wait and see what happens until after the game.
Well, first of all, a goalie's never going to admit that he's tired.
That's your job as a coach.
I can't imagine that. He's young. They've been off for 4+
right.
months.
I think that's part of it, though. When you have been off for 4+ months, how do your muscles, you haven't played anything close to back-to-backs in a long, long time.
Yeah.
It's tough. This is different.
This is true. In fact, I'll be curious to see how some of these other coaches, how they go about it. But a lot of teams don't have that backup that, they're as confident. You know what I mean? They have just the one.
Right.
They have the workhorse. Right.
If
most
he's tired,
teams don't
it doesn't
have
matter.
The one
he's still
and one
going
a.
in there.
Right, right. All right, that'll do it for us today. Good show, man. That went fast. We'll have certainly a lot to get into tomorrow, including Game 2, Predators and Coyotes. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. Be safe. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. See you then.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At ChumbaCasino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.